You're listening to Real Facts on Real Estate with Sean Patrick Maloney.
This sounds good.
Welcome to episode 30, Setting Yourself Up for Success. I'm your host, Sean Patrick Maloney. Thanks for joining me this week. I'm really excited to be on my 30th episode of this podcast. Really appreciate everybody who's been listening, and the membership continues to grow, so let's keep up the flow. Today we're going to talk about setting yourself up for success. In real estate, it's easy to set yourself up for failure. A few weeks back, I talked about under-promise, over-deliver, and what it means to make promises that are too big and not being able to follow through on them. But this week, I want to talk about setting yourself up for success throughout the entire process. In the early part of the process, some of the things that you can do to set yourself up for success in real estate is to make sure your clients know the costs. It's amazing to me how many clients come into this world and they don't actually have any idea what closing costs, prepaids, and also what their down payment will be. It's very, very shocking. Unfortunately, the mortgage industry, I don't know if they're just trying to avoid not doing deals or what they're doing, but their clients are some of the most uneducated clients by the time they get to us real estate agents that I've ever seen. It's kind of pathetic, honestly. I've done deals where I get to go move forward, and then I realize we're not ready to move forward. They didn't even know that there's a such thing as closing costs. And of course, you know, if you know what you're doing, there's ways that you can write in for seller's concession and other things, but we can talk about that in another time. One of the first things you want to do whenever you're working with any client in real estate is make sure they understand the cost all the way through the entire transaction and when the money will be due. Lots of people have lots of money that's stored away in things like 401ks and other retirement plans where it takes them days to access the money. So you want to make sure they know the cost and when they're going to run into them so that they are ready for the whole entire transaction. You also want to explain what you do. Explain what your actual job is. I know this sounds weird, explain what I do. What I mean by it is explain what part of the process is your job, what part of the process is the lender's job, what part of the process is the attorney's job, what part of the process is the other agent's job, and what part of the process is the client's job. That way there, in the future, while you're dealing with the client, they're not wondering why you didn't do something and then think that you're putting it off on somebody else when you say that the client should have done that or that the lender should have been there at this point. This is a really important one to educating them on exactly what you do and what part of the entire transaction is your part of the process. After you explain what you do, you want to explain why you do it, what the value in it is, why it's your job versus the other person in the transaction job, and how it's going to help them. Then you explain how you're going to do it. What do you do? Do you drive the check to somewhere? Do you mail the check to somewhere? Do you do it over the phone or do you do it in person? Should you have an in-person meeting or should it be something online? Explaining how you do your job, why you do your job, and what job you do will ensure that the client not only has it done by you, but that they actually are happy with the entire process. Then explain who you serve. Explain why you work as an agent for them and how you serve them in the jobs that you do and how you do them and why you do them and what you do. These are all going to come down to how you serve them as your client and where you focus your focus on. So where you focus is another one where it's telling them, if I work within these areas, maybe you have a sales area, you work from the North Shore to the South Shore, and if they send you something out Western Mass, you might do a referral. But making sure they understand where you work is another way to make sure you don't have a letdown when they want to see something outside your service area or when they want to work somewhere, such as meet up in a place where it's outside your area. Letting people know expectations up front, letting them know how the process works, it's going to ensure that you really work well with your clients and that they're happy with the end result. Far too often, people get involved, they rush right into the situation, they overpromise, they realize after they can't keep up with everything they said they're going to do, or they realize after that the client doesn't know what the next step is. One of the things that buyers or sellers or anyone else in real estate always is relying on us for is the knowledge, is the calmness of a transaction, to keep everything together and to have them understand what is the next step for them and what should they be worried about and what's normal. Unfortunately, far too often in transactions, you find that the buyer and seller absolutely have no idea what's next, are an absolute panic stricken, and are waiting for their agent to reach out to them to explain the next thing to do. And during that whole entire time, they're worried about everything and anything that could go wrong because they don't know exactly what to expect. So make sure your clients are in the know. During the transaction, there's a lot of things that you need to set. Expectations of how the process is going to move forward and what you're expecting them to do. Are you expecting them to go to the town hall? Are you expecting them to take measurements? Are they to expect you to take measurements? Are they to expect you to go to the town hall? Obviously, you shouldn't allow that, because if you were expected to go to the town hall, it puts a lot of liability on you to check the permits versus them checking the permits. But letting them know that that's a normal step that buyers need to go and they need to check in on the town hall permits, that's going to explain to them that, hey, this is a buyer beware state like Massachusetts is. You really need to make sure that you do your due diligence. You can also let them know during this time what your working hours are. And this is one, the working hours one, that commonly is misinterpreted. Of course, during a disaster, during offer, during certain stages of the deal, you may work outside the normal working hours. But one of the things that happens far too often in real estate is the real estate professional answers the person back at any given hour and then complains about the fact that they send messages. It's perfectly fine to explain up front when you work, and then also to have a voicemail that says, if you're calling me after the hours of 8 p.m., I will respond back to you around 9 to 9:30 tomorrow morning during my morning callback hours. These things are important to set, because if you allow people to get out of control, they're going to expect everything of you. And then when you answer back at 11 o'clock one night, 11 o'clock the next night, and then two nights in a row you don't answer back, they think you're slacking off. They think you're not doing what you should do. Instead of explaining that during normal working hours, unless something very out of the ordinary happens, I'm not going to be working these hours. Here's the time to get a hold of me. One of the best ways to always explain this is to say, what time works better to talk? 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock? Not saying what time works best for you, because as soon as you say what time works best for you, they're not going to think I need to schedule this during my lunch break, or I need to schedule this during a break or time off at work. They're going to think I need to schedule this when I'm out of work, which is going to be 5 p.m. on or on the weekend. So letting them know these things, your working hours, it's going to set a realistic expectation again. You're not going to overpromise, you're going to overdeliver. And then you have either email chains, like when you're sending email chains around, who's expected to be on there? Sometimes us agents, we make the mistake of thinking we're just going to send it to the husband or we're just going to send it to the wife. Come to find out the other party thinks that they're not being included in everything, or come to find out that the husband or wife isn't sending over the messages that you're sending and the other person is in the complete dark. So making sure you know who's supposed to be on the email chain. Is there an attorney? Is there a client? Is there a second client? Is there a mom or dad who's lending money into the deal that expects to be on these things? So getting these right, again, this is going to set yourself up for success. Instead of having somebody mad at you that you didn't tell them that the insurance was due and the wife didn't tell them and now they're arguing with their wife and they're arguing with you because you sent out an email to one person instead of everybody that belongs on the chain, can really cause a big issue. So just make sure always you know who's supposed to be on those email chains. And then when it comes to driving around, are you expected to pick them up and drive them to every home? Are you expected to pick up the checks? Are they expected to drive the check to you? Personally, I believe on deposit checks, when you make an offer on a deal, the client should drive it to you. You shouldn't be driving out there to go meet with them to get a check. You should expect them to be able to come over to your office and dedicate the time to the transaction. Of course, sometimes this isn't always available, so I work around what I have. But always setting yourself up to be driving everywhere, always setting yourself up to do that. Some people see it as being the service professional, but I see it as a complete waste of time of your intelligence, because your clients are ultimately the one purchasing the home, so they should be okay with the fact that they're driving the check over. And if you're a really busy agent and you continue to grow and you set it up that always you drive for checks and you always drive everything every which direction, instead of to letting them know that you send checks through the mail and that you talk with other agents about making sure you have verbal communication for that check to be sent or that your clients bring the checks to you, you're suddenly spending an enormous amount of time at a job that you shouldn't be at. And this can mean that you're losing out on business. So make sure to set that expectation correctly. The next to talk about would be inspections. Are you expected to be at the inspection? Are they expected to be at the inspection? These are things that buyer to seller, there's going to be differences. With a seller, you want to explain to them why you don't want to be at the inspection. As a seller's agent, they think you want to be there so you can just hear everything and you can answer right away. Truth is, you can't answer anything. You're not an inspector. So you're just there finding out everything and anything that's wrong with the house. And then in a state like Massachusetts, where you have to disclose every material known defect, you end up having to disclose all these problems you find out that are one inspector's thoughts versus another's. So as a buyer's agent, you want to be there because you want to know everything that's wrong with the home and you want to be ready to work with your buyer to explain to them, okay, here's the things we can negotiate to. But on a seller's agent, you don't want to be there. So that's why you want to set this expectation correctly at the beginning and during the entire process, because if you don't tell your sellers that you shouldn't be at an inspection, you don't explain it properly, they're going to think you're just trying to skip out on work. They're going to think, geez, this guy's just lazy, or this woman doesn't want to be there. But the reality is you shouldn't be there. So if you explain it to them before it comes up, not when it comes up, they won't think that you're trying to skip out on something. They'll think that you know what you're doing. Same thing with accompanied showings. Most sellers think that it's a great thing to have an accompanied showing. It's really not. It's absolutely the worst, because when it comes down to it, that person thinks of you as a salesperson and they think of their agent as an agent. They want to be there with their person that they trust so that they can talk bad about the home, so that they don't feel bad about saying the things they don't like, so that they can pay attention and that they're not being upsold the whole entire time. Often, when an agent ends up accompanying a showing as a seller's agent, they think they're there to point out everything positive, and then they don't end up letting anybody spend the proper time looking at what they're looking at. They end up rushing them around, they point out a bunch of things, and the people feel rushed. They move on to the next room, and ultimately, it doesn't allow for people to really sit there and process the information. So if you're not going to do accompanied showings and you really don't want to be doing them, again, set that up early. Let them know that that's not what you do, and that's not the best way to sell a home. Of course, there's sometimes a new build where not everything's there and you know a lot that the builder has told you and you need to explain to them what's there, because otherwise they won't have the vision of what's going to be there in the future. But these things are rare, and this is not every day. Most of the time we're selling homes that already exist and that show themselves fine. You can also make sure that within your MLS sheets or your other search engine sheets where you're putting out the information about the house, that you're putting the room sizes, the room features, and all the rest of the features of the home. That way you're saving yourself from having to drive down there to tell them something that could have been listed online. When it comes to closing, there's a lot to tell them as well. Will you be there or will you not be there? You certainly don't have to be there, and some agents explain to the sellers or buyers that this is a closing attorney's job. This is the mortgage person's job. They go to closings. We don't go to closings because we're not needed. Do you know when you're at a closing as a real estate agent, all you are is just a pretty face sitting in the corner wasting space? Honestly, most agents go to a closing and they end up actually making it worse because they sit there on their cell phone talking to people who aren't there, or they tell stories, tend to be war stories about other ones that have failed or gone wrong, or I can't believe that this person did this or that, and they're distracting people from the closing process, only making everybody spend more time on the closing, because short talk is the biggest thing that grows closings out to really, really long times. So if you explain to them at the very beginning that you're not going to be at the closing, you can save yourself time. Again, with inspections, with closings, with accompanied showings, these are things that experienced older agents that have been working in the business for a while, that are doing the majority of the transactions, they realize these are all time-wasting behaviors. These are all times where you could be somewhere else and you could be getting something done. Personally, I like to attend closings because I like to create relationships with my clients, but I use them in a different way than a lot of agents do. So when I grow and I continue to move forward, I'll put in an admin that I'll send over there. But again, we're doing it in a different fashion. We're giving a gift during that time. We're there to hold their hand to make sure they're already ready. We're there to tell them congratulations. We're there for a lot of other things. But again, if you set your expectations right, whether you'll be there or not be there, they won't be surprised when you're not there, or they won't be surprised that you are there. But just letting them know what to expect. Letting them know what they need the day of closing is also a big one. The mortgage person ultimately should be telling them what they need. They should be telling them about the certified checks versus a personal check. They should be telling them about the need to bring their license and photo ID. Should be telling them all the different documents they need if it's a seller. They should also be telling them that they need the original fire certificate, as well as that they need the original paid water bill. But this also is the agent's job. And during this process, at the very beginning, you should have already explained it. Throughout the transaction, you should explain it. And then the week of the closing, you should make sure that they understand exactly what's going to be done. This is something that's really important because, to be honest, this is one of the most stressful times for people. Whether buying or selling, they don't do many of these transactions, and suddenly they're in a multi-100,000, if not million-dollar transaction, and they're failing like a deer in headlights because it's that day, and they don't want to mess up. This is a very, very stressful time for them, so you're there to relieve the stress. And by setting yourself up for success by explaining these things early, you're going to end up finding that success that you're looking for. When you're explaining the closing, you also want to tell them what their lender job is. You want to make sure they understand the lender's job so that you don't get blamed for what the lender should do. One of the things they always do is to talk with the lender themselves, yourself. So that way there you check in with them and you say, hey, what's the expectations of the client today? And that way there you can get the info so that you can make sure you know exactly what to tell them so that they are successful and find success in the actual closing. And then the other one is if you're working with the seller on closing, you want to talk to them about having the home ready. Before the final walkthrough, you want to talk to them about what is broom clean. You want to talk to them about what is acceptable to be handing off to the next clients. Do people want the tile to create a full tile floor if they crack one? Do they want the paint? Do they want the shelves in the basement? These are things that you can not only tell your clients, but you can also reach out to the buyer's agent and say to them, hey, my clients were thinking about leaving 20 tiles for the kitchen floor. It's an older floor and I don't think you can get them at the store anymore. Do they want them to leave it or not? This is something that totally can set you up for success or failure. You may have a client that thinks it's the best thing going. They're going to give the new people a lawnmower. They're going to give them a snowblower. They're going to give them shovels. They're going to give them all this great stuff. Absolutely no cost to them. It's a gift for closing. Well, guess what? Little did you know that they don't do anything themselves. They have a lawnmower guy. They have a snowblower guy that's going to do the snow plowing. And they also planned on throwing your shed in the trash barrel because they hate sheds and they're full of bugs and they don't want them. Then they go to closing and suddenly they have 3 gas engines to get rid of and a whole bunch of shovels that they don't even know what you do with them because they don't do anything themselves. They don't want to close because they want you to take all that material out of there before they close because it's going to be very expensive to get rid of all this and I don't want it. Don't believe it can happen? I've seen everything. I've seen absolutely everything when it comes to closing gifts that if I saw one time where there were shelves that it would cost thousands of dollars to replace these wooden shelves that were in the basement. And guess what? The people thought, okay, well, we'll leave them for the future people. I can tell you that someone had to come into that basement with a chainsaw that day, cut them up, dumpster them before we could close. And I've also seen people turn down tiles that match the floor that are up top. I've seen people turn down paint. But then I've also seen the opposite direction, where sellers think that they're funny, saying, oh, this is the paint that matches, and there's about 150 gallons of useless dried paints in the basement that they don't know what to do with. On hazmat day, they didn't take care of it, so now they're not sure what they do with it. So make sure, on final walkthroughs, that you set your buyer up for success in explaining the value in keeping one or two tiles, as well as you set the seller up for success in explaining the value and talking it out before you leave it, so it's not on the last day. And last but not least, explaining both to the buyer and seller why it's important to be out ahead of the closing by about 24 hours and how it's important to go through the final walkthrough by about 24 hours before closing so that, God forbid, there is something, you have time to deal with it. You're not running on the 11th hour trying to figure out how to fit all this stuff in the back of your car and then what to do with it after you go through your closing, because I've seen it happen. You want to make sure whenever you're working all these things, you think about everybody in the entire transaction. Never rely on anybody else. When setting yourself up for success, the best thing to remember is to always blame yourself when anything goes wrong. You think the other agent's doing their job, but you're not checking in with them, making sure that each step of the process is being done, that's your fault. You think that it's funny that the lender doesn't tell them the closing costs and the deal blows apart because you don't have the closing costs plus the amount of money they need for the deposit and down payment, that's your fault. You think that the client was wrong because they didn't know that they needed certified funds the day of the closing, and now you're running around trying to get a check from a bank certified so you can come back to the closing and close late? That's your fault. So if you do everything with the thought process of owning all your own actions, you'll always know to check in on everybody, make sure people know things ahead of time, and make sure you have a well-defined process. If you do this, I guarantee you, your deals are going to close with more success, you're going to close more deals, and you're going to close happier. You're going to have less stressful moments at the time of closings. You're going to have less stress during home inspections. And you're going to have happier clients writing you better reviews and sending you more referrals. Thanks for listening this week again, celebrating our 30th episode here. I really appreciate all the listeners. Make sure to follow the podcast if you don't already and tell your friends. If you have any questions, feel free to PM me, DM me, give me a call. And I look forward to talking to you next week.